ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय इन्द्रो भगवता तत्थम् त्रैलोक्या श्रियम् ऊर्जितम् भुञ्जानपाति लोकम् स्त्रीम् खामाम् लोके प्रवर्षति
Indra, King of Heaven, receiving benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus enjoying highly developed opulences, maintains the living entities all over the three worlds by pouring sufficient rain on all the planets.
Jnanam Chanu Yugam Brute Hari Siddha Swarup Drik Rishi Rupa Dhara Karma Yogam Yogesha Rup Drik.
In every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of Siddhas, such as Sanaka, to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons such as Yajnavalkya to teach the way of karma. And he assumes the form of great yogis such as Dattatreya to teach the system of mystic yoga. Purport
by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
For the benefit of all human society, not only does the Lord assume the form of Manu as an incarnation to rule the universe properly, but he also assumes the forms of a teacher, a yogi, jnani, and so on, for the benefit of human society. The duty of human society, therefore, is to accept the path of action enunciated by the Supreme Lord. In the present age, the sum and substance of all Vedic knowledge is to be found in Bhagavad Gita, which is personally taught by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the same Supreme Godhead, assuming the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, expands the teachings of Bhagavad Gita all over the world. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is so kind and merciful to human society that he is always anxious to take the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead.
In every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of Siddhas, such as Sanak, to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons such as Yajnavalkya to teach the way of karma. And he assumes the form of great yogis such as Dattatreya to teach the system of mystic yoga. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 14. Entitled The System of Universal Management, Text 7 and 8. In the previous chapters, Srimad Bhagavatam explains the story of the churning of the ocean of milk. Therein, the devas, despite their power, fame, and opulence, are put in a situation of terrible suffering that is beyond their control.
Krishna tells in Gita, Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avatanojana mamu pechitu konteya punar janmana vidyate.
The nature of this material existence is that suffering is inevitable. Whoever we are, wherever we are, from the highest planet to the lowest, there is this consistency that because everything is temporary, dukalaya mashashvatam, we have to suffer. The cause of the suffering is the very same cause of happiness at root. Anandamayo vyashat. That the Supreme Absolute Truth is the ultimate enjoyer of infinite pleasure. And mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhutana sanatana. Because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are Satchit Ananda. We also exist for the purpose of pleasure. But because the soul is eternal, and the relationship of love between the soul and God is eternal, the pleasure of that relationship is the origin of all pleasure. In fact, it is the only reality of pleasure. The ecstasy of the divine substance of the soul and its culmination is the exchange of love between God and the soul. But in this material creation, forgetting our own spiritual identity, which is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, forgetting our loving relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, we try to find that pleasure through the temporary experiences of the body and the mind. And all these facilities, anything that gives us any level of pleasure, we naturally become attracted to it. To the degree it gives us pleasure, we become practically addicted to it. Why? Because it's connecting us to our original desire of wanting to enjoy a loving relationship with Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. And Krishna tells in Gita, all the attractive, beautiful things of this entire creation are but a spark of his splendor. This material existence is a reflection of our own spiritual reality. The real substance of pleasure cannot really be enjoyed here. Just a reflection. A reflection of a single spark. Can infatuate and obsess not only humans and animals and insects and plants, but even the devatas, the demigods. What to speak of the original source? Whatever pleasures in this world according to the analogy often used, is like a reflection of a single sun ray. Compare that to the quantity of pleasure of the entire sun planet, which includes all sun rays, but not the reflection, the real substance. That is the pleasure of reconnecting with Krishna. It is not that seeking pleasure is something that people just like to do. Because of the nature of the soul, eternally, seeking pleasure is the absolute necessity of existence. And the great tapasis or yogis who give up physical temporary pleasure, they're doing it to experience a higher pleasure. It may be the pleasure of Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, or the full-fledged all-inclusive realization is that of Bhagavan. But everyone's seeking pleasure. These beautiful stories in the scriptures are so important because we are so much conditioned, habituated to finding alternative pleasures to that of the real soul's love for God. But whoever we are and whatever we accomplish, because within this worldly existence, everything is temporary and limited. Everything ultimately brings suffering. You become attached to something and you lose it. That's material existence. And then you get attached to something else and you lose it and you lose it. Now, some may question, why did God create like this? Where anything you get attached to, you have to lose and you have to suffer. Why? If we didn't lose these things, the soul would likely just go on trying to enjoy these petty little reflections of tiny little sparks of real substance forever. But the sufferings of this world, however small or great they may be, are ultimately created by material energy for the purpose of waking us up to what we really want, for the purpose of sobering us. Krishna wants to give us the best, but we're so obsessed with taking the worst. So a loving mother and father, will she just let the children carry on taking the worst? Sometimes some suffering is necessary so that we'll take seriously what we really have within us that we've forgotten. When Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world in the early days of our society, he was asked, why have you come? He said, I have come to remind you of what you have forgotten. That we're all eternal souls, full of knowledge and bliss. We all have a relationship with Krishna, and that love for Krishna is within us. We find in these stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, even the demigods, and this story is really, if we take them seriously, which is the intention in which these scriptures are written, that we take them seriously, that it really bursts the bubble of our illusions. We're thinking that by making some excellent material arrangement, we're going to be happy and find security and stability. By getting more money, by better health, by more influential people around us, by power, prestige. Well, nobody in this earth planet, however successful, can compare to the demigods. Even the wealthiest, most powerful person in this planet, hardly a single one of them lives to 100 years old. Now, for some little insects, they're born at sunset, and they go through an entire lifespan with children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. They go through their infancy, their babyhood, their childhood, their adolescence, then their middle age, old age, really old age. And by the time of the sun rays, for those who survive, they die of really old age. Yes? Now, for those little insects, because many of them don't live till the sunrise, they really consider what an expansive, fantastic life. He lived till the sun rises. What is compared to demigods, for us to live 100 years is not even that. Our 6 months is hardly one day for the demigods. Yes? They live extremely long lives. Up to Lord Brahma, who lives over 311 trillion years. Same body. So these demigods, they have long lives and they have great power and they're always in good health. We never read in the scriptures about a demigod with cancer or hepatitis, getting strokes or heart attacks. Doesn't exist. Those things are just for little earth people. Demigods, they don't have. They don't even go old, really. When their karma runs out, they just have to leave their bodies and leave everything behind. They don't have to go through all this old age stuff like we do. Not the same. It's like more like a shift of posts. They're just transferred out according to their karmas to the next place. And here we find the demigods. Because the nature of this world is everyone is looking for pleasure. And the soul has an unlimited capacity to enjoy pleasure. Because its capacity is in Krishna, who's unlimited. And right in the middle of everything, at the peak of their lives, when everything's so good, there are other people who want what we have. It's the nature of material existence. Wherever you go, envy. Essentially, we come to this world because we want to be enjoyers. But factually, our constitutional position is Jivara Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. We're eternal servants of Krishna. Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarva Lokameshwaram. Suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvam am shanti mirchati. Just to understand this truth will bring about real peace forever. Krishna is the real proprietor of everything. He's the real enjoyer of everything. And he's the real best friend of every living being. But we want to be proprietor. We want to be enjoyer. And we want to consider that I am the beneficiary of others. By my goodness, other people are being maintained. Or by my badness, other people suffer. We want to control. This is material illusion. But because everybody essentially has, when we come to this conditioned state, it is due to the root cause of being envious of God's position. And in that state, we are potentially envious of everyone and anyone who impedes the progress of what I want. If someone has more than me, or someone has something that I want, our tendency is envy. And because of that ego, I'm the enjoyer, and the envy that comes from it, there's so much conflict, so much war, so much disunity, disparity between people. If we look at the animal kingdom, on one level, it's very beautiful to see what's happening. You know, the birds are singing and flying. Now, we're enjoying seeing the birds singing and flying, but the worm is not enjoying seeing the bird because this bird is singing and flying, looking to eat the worm. Yes? Little insects are being eaten by the birds. And the insects are eating littler insects. Just an airport, and one company is talking about saving the tigers. There's only, I think, 1,411 tigers left in India. It's very good. I mean, as far as trying to save the tigers, they're people, beautiful species. But the deers, they would be in ecstasy if the tigers were forever extinct from the world, right? Because tigers eat deers. They eat their children, they eat their wives, their husbands, and at any minute they may eat them. So everything is so relevant, relative. But jiva jiva sajivanam. The one living being is eating another living being for survival. Isn't that something to think about? Why the world was made like this, where we have to eat each other just to live? Yes? The spiritual world, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jharkhanda, he was showing what spiritual life is like. You do not have to eat each other. God provides everything plentifully, beautifully, wonderfully. And everything's eternal. There's no death. But this world, death is imminent everywhere. So these tigers and the deers, they are worst of enemies. Tiger only thinks of deers in terms of eating them. They don't think about, oh, such nice, sparkling eyes. And the way they jump is so graceful. Yes, when we see a deer jumping, we think, oh, what a beautiful work of art. How graceful they're jumping and how beautiful their eyes are sparkling and how nice. The psychology of a tiger, when they think of deer, it's only one thing. Their taste.
what they taste like.
Not only the taste of their blood, but also, you know, how that will diminish the pain of hunger in their stomachs. And the deers, when they think of tigers, they don't think, oh, such beautiful stripes, and so heroic, and so fearless. And the deers don't think, let's name our team after the tigers. To show people how strong and ferocious we can be. It's the king of the jungle. When they think of the tiger, they're stricken with fear and hatred. This is the being that has killed my relatives, and this is the being that at any moment is going to kill me. So what is the relationship between tiger and deer? Fear, exploitation, hatred. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told the tigers to chant Hare Krishna. Then he told the deers to chant Hare Krishna. And they were all dancing and chanting along with Lord Chaitanya. And during the kirtan, it was so ecstatic that the tigers and the deers, they gathered in the same place. And amazingly, the tigers were no longer looking at the deers as food. And the deers were no longer looking at the tigers as death personified. They were seeing each other's eternal souls. The holy name of Krishna helps us to see the spiritual essence in each other and how Krishna is the connecting force between us. And bhakti, or devotion, is our relationship with Krishna, with each other. The tigers and deers began to embrace each other. And not in a romantic way, but in a very spiritual way. They kissed each other. Hare Krishna. In ecstatic spiritual love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was looking at them thinking, this is just like Vrindavan. This is eternally what happens in the spiritual world. All living beings, they love each other. Because everyone is self-sufficient. No one's in need of anything. Everyone is simply giving, giving, giving their heart's loves to each other, to Krishna. So that is the spiritual world. But the material world is created in such a way that for my survival, I have to exploit something or someone else. And human existence is to minimize as far as possible in a spirit of service rather than exploitation. We also need to eat in this material existence. But fresh vegetables and fruits and other such natural, where we inflict minimal violence and pain on other living beings. And then where that food and the mode of goodness is, where there is minimal violence and pain, when we offer it with love and devotion to Krishna, we're actually helping to liberate the souls of those vegetables and grains and fruits. It's not an act of exploitation. It's an act of loving service. So demigods, in previous chapters of Bhagavat, we find they lose everything. And it happens from time to time. In fact, the Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially select those historical moments where the demigods lose everything. There's not many interesting stories about when they're just enjoying life as usual, right? Because there's not much lesson in that. But what they do when they lose everything, that's where the lesson is. They realize, I'm helpless. I need the help of God, of Vishnu. And in every step, Krishna's there to reciprocate. If we turn to him with sincerity, with the sense of real urgency. In this particular verse that we're reading today, we find how, and Srila Prabhupada writes in purport, for the benefit of all human society, not only does the Lord assume the form of Manu as an incarnation to rule the universe properly, but he also assumes the form of a teacher, yogi, jnani, and so on, for the benefit of human society. Nigama kalpataroa galitam palam, that the Vedic literatures are like a desire tree. According to one's inclination, according to one's aspiration, according to one's level of consciousness, one can take to a path that will bring us to the ultimate goal. Or one can take, the Vedas also provide paths that regulate our life either slightly or greatly, give us a higher realization of happiness within material existence, try to bring us from ignorance to passion to goodness, eventually to bring us to the point of surrendering to the Lord. Therefore, there are many forms of dharma taught by different sages, yogis, jnanis. And essentially, in their pure forms, they are all presented by the Lord to elevate human society. You know, some people's conception of God, either you accept, you know, you accept this or you're going to hell forever. But God is so merciful. In the Vedic tradition, we learn that he comes in so many ways. And even if you're not willing to take to spiritual life, he's presenting higher material alternatives so that you can become less implicated in karma. And eventually, you can become a little more pious, and that will bring one to associating with higher and higher types of people, and eventually you're on the path, maybe a very slow path. Tribadam, what is that? Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhavarjana. Krishna tells in Gita that the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. The Vedas mainly teach us how to live a more noble and proper life and enjoy more pious pleasures within the modes of material nature. But then Krishna tells Arjuna and tells the world, go beyond all these modes of nature. Go beyond the flowery words of the